Now this morning we have a special treat as Polly Quinn is going to give us a brief history of our church. And be prepared because she's going to ask a question of you all as soon as she's done. It's not an exam. It's just a question. Polly?
Exactly what it was like from an account of the time. The Reverend Nathan Perkins was sent from the Congregational Society of Hartford, of New Haven, Connecticut, north to preach and to establish churches. The west side of Vermont was very different from the east side, and there were very few churches. The only congregational churches were in Bennington and in Rutland. And this is what Reverend Perkins said in his writing of his account of it, what he found. To quote, "The frowns of the Almighty are on this state for their sins." He comes from a very Calvinist society. "The seasons here for 2 years past have been unfavorable. Famine is now felt on this land. The year 1789 will be remembered in Vermont as one of calamity and famine. More than a quarter of the people will have nothing to eat or have no meat for 8 weeks. And some will starve. I saw several women with 10 or 12 children around them with nothing in the house to eat, and the children were all crying for bread, and the mothers were turned into ghosts from weeping. The main trail through Vermont from the Falls of the Otter, which is Virgin's, to Williston, where the first governor lived, passed through Hinesburg. And former parishioners of Reverend Perkins lived in a cabin here. So he stopped on his way and met with Elizabeth and Josiah Steele and their son Eliphaz met with four members from the New Milford, Connecticut. That was on May 16th. And the following week, May 20th, they gathered and established the church here in Hinesburg, the first church in Chittenden County. And north of Williston, he found no church, no settlement large enough to sustain a church. And he found 40 towns totally without any kind of a church, no religion at all. They were mainly deists, which he despised, believing in the goodness of man rather than in the original sin and the need of saving. Arriving at Onion River Falls, which is Winooski, he found Ethan Allen's grave, and he wrote, "An awful infidel, one of the wickedest men who ever strode this guilty globe. I stood and looked at his grave in pious horror. He described Vermont people as self-sufficient and independent in the living and thinking. At every hand of every family was needed for work every day of their lives, every daylight hour, if they were to survive. Everything they wore or ate, they made or grew or hunted or fished. No more than a sixth of the families attended family prayer in the whole state. And they chose to have no Sabbath, no minister, no religion, no heaven, no hell, no morality. I grieve to hear what women, what thousands of women and children have endured to come to Vermont. And the Hinesburg Church services were continued in members' homes for another 15 years before they had a settled minister. In 1799, the Methodist Church was formed with 11 members. In 1800, there were 933 residents in Hinesburg. In 1801, the Quakers met in Moncton. In 1802, Baptist memory is that Burlington was a godless place and not a man could be found to say a prayer for a respected citizen. In 1810, land was given for the Congregational Church, which was south of town. And money was raised by subscription to form a multi-denominational church with 26 members, most of whom were Congregationalists. In 1836 was the time of camp meetings, and Hinesburg had a series of them with Dr. Burchard, was a noted evangelist, who came to these camp meetings. And Dr. Marsh at UVM, who was a Universalist Unitarian Universalist, was very opposed to this sort of action. And he questioned. It culminated in a meeting here in Hinesburg, halfway between Burlington and Middlebury, to question the efficacy of whether of evangelism, whether the means of high pressure was better than the more quiet and agencies of regular and Christian training and steady use of serious means of grace. His report came from, reporters came from Burlington to attend this, to see this. I mean, it was a big deal. And the space was so limited that this entrance to the meeting was restricted to the members and their friends. And so when the reporters tried to break into the meeting, they were promptly arrested. And that was that. It was a time of great excitement. The railroads north from Richmond bypassed Hinesburg, as did the one from Shallott through Shelburne and north to Burlington. And every census thereafter showed a loss in population. And by the 1900s, it was serious indeed. So that in 1912, there were many fewer people in the congregations. And the vestry was enlarged and a wing added to the original congregation building. And it was rebuilt so that finished on Christmas Eve so they could have services there the next day. And the lovely arched window from the original Congregational Church was placed there, and you can see it in the vestry as it is today. And so many dinners were served in the vestry over the years. There was no Heinsberg water supply in those days, and water had to be taken from the creamery in milk cans down to wash the dishes. I'm sure we wouldn't have passed the health regulations today. But they were delicious dinners nonetheless, and I remember them well. And in 1917, the congregation was down to 10 members, 10 men, and 43 women. And so they voted to join with the Methodists. 40 years before, they had decided they did not want to join the Methodists, but they were, by now, were, I guess, desperate enough that they could. In 1919, the Baptists found themselves with a church badly in need of repairs and no more money for repairs than they had for a settled minister. And so they petitioned to join the Federated Church, and that became the United Church. And now we're down. The United Church communion was still served separately by the three denominations until one Sunday, Miss Mary Miles, the daughter of the Baptist of the town doctor, the town doctor's daughter, led her group to the rail with the others and joined it. And from then on, the communion has been always served together. There were three women's groups for each denomination. And that, in 1933, they decided to join together in Women's Union, which is now the auxiliary. In 1936, the Methodist Church caught fire and burned. And the insurance money was used to raise the Baptist Church, which had been built in 1826, was raised and the furnace put in, and Sunday school rooms downstairs. And the congregational, the three buildings were used on a rotating basis. The congregational church was much too hard to heat. It was a very large building. And so they finally decided to sell it to the Masons for a dollar, and it was remodeled as Patriot Lodge. It was destroyed by fire on February 1950. I had just moved to town a few months before, and that was my first memory was the fire, and you could see it forever. And the wind had been in the west and propitiously changed to the north just in time to save the town, because the whole town would have gone. After World War II, St. Jude's Church was built, and Father Mulcahy and Reverend Osborne was the pastor here, and Rabbi Wall in Burlington were very interested in ecumenism and started the original Vermont Ecumenical Society. I was a member of that as the representative of Troy Conference Christian Unity and Interreligious Concerns, and as a congregational, that was the only thing I could be in the Troy Conference, was but I was on the VEC for many years because of it, and I learned a lot. In 1991, new bylaws were formed, and the United Church recognized ecumenical and associate memberships. And our journey has brought us really right up to the present time of memory. And our church has changed, but it remains remarkably the same. After James Osborne was pastor, the parish house was built and named for him. The Masonic Lodge, then later joined and added the Sunday school rooms, on the enlarging the space so that there was no kindergarten in school then, and they wanted space for preschool classes. And then, of course, the school took over kindergarten and left us with the large building. So we enjoy it for our Sunday school. The lovely stained glass windows here were added in the late 60s. Chet Simmons, a beloved former pastor, retired here and was a very important fixture in our church. We have a present minister in retirement, Wayne Schwab, which I think we should now have a feature of retired ministers. Bill Neal became our pastor. We had more UCC members than Methodists at that, and he was acceptable to both the UCC and to the church. And Michelle Rogers Brigham led us in a transition period of discovery who we are and where we wanted our future to go, to be. And she led us through more than 2 years of discernment, and very important for this church. And it ended up with, in 2011, the United Church of Hinesburg voted to become an open and affirming congregation in the United Church of Christ. At the same time, we designated ourselves as welcoming in the United Methodist Church and reconciling in the Baptist Church. And a search committee was formed. Sharon Lee, Paul Eddy, Ellen Dooley, Lori McKenna, and a number of others I can't remember, but who worked very hard for the transition period, leading to the our hiring Jared Hamilton as our minister. And now I need your help and your memories. And what do you remember? And what has the Hinesburg Church meant to you in your journeys? And just speak up, please, and correct me if I've said anything that was wrong.
I was brought up Southern Baptist, and I'm pretty much recovered from that now. being able to come to church and be who I was and sit with my partner and be in the house of God and be treated with love was something that I never would have gotten in Alabama. And probably there are places in Vermont that I wouldn't have felt that love like I did when I got here. So I think the fact that that was started in 2011 and Rhonda and I arrived about that time was pretty wonderful.
Thank you. David, I know you have memories.
Then the church was closed down. I don't, of course, this was originally the Baptist church, which the Methodist and church in town. The church was closed down. I don't know the date, but I'm going to say early 1900s that it wasn't used for a while. And the house immediately north was the original parsonage that goes with this, that went with this church. And at some point in time, it was sold to a man by the name of Marshall Tilley. Now, there are probably only three other people in this church that know who Marshall Tilley was. He's long gone, and there are no relatives, so I can mention his name. Axel Tilley ran a stagecoach to Burlington by horse and buggy. He also was a bootlegger. Now, he didn't want to really keep his supplies in his house, and this church was empty. So the story goes, he kept his extra supplies in the basement of this church. Polly mentioned, in 1936, Heinsberg had two misfortunes. The Methodist Church, which stood next to the Good Times Cafe, and there was another house, burned. And Harry Russell, that would be Harry Russell's grandfather, died. I think it was all the same day. There was a mad scramble to open this church up again for his funeral. And I would like to mention points of interest. Underneath the stage is the baptistry where they used to for baptismal services. And I remember helping my father bring going to the creamery and getting hot boiling water to bring in, empty into the baptismal for a baptismal. I don't know who it was. But anyway, my uncle Leland was a master craftsman. He did the altar, the railing, the lectern, and this cabinet work in the back. And I have to point out, oh, the reason we sit here, my parents sat here, and I've always sat here since. I've been married in this church twice. Johnny Meade was my best man both times, 50 years apart. And he said, "Don't get married again, I can't stand this anymore." All three of my children were married here. And I want to point out that these stained glass windows were under the direction of Reverend Jim Osborne. And we have enjoyed them ever since. Thank you.
Come up here so you can hear me. I just remember hanging out here as a kid, and Jim Osborne and Heather found records that said I was partially baptized. We still don't know what that means. and to Dick Bell's dismay, my mother started the penny jar. Said she found a penny almost every day, and if they collected enough of them, it would be a valuable resource. So if you still collect pennies for my mom's jar, if you roll them first, Dick will be happy. the other thing I remember sort of vividly is painting this church. The scaffolding that we put in, we had to brace it up because the legs wouldn't go quite to the ground, and we couldn't move the pews. Painting the ceiling was an interesting challenge, and I think there were a few people who were not happy that we transformed from the varnished seats that people would stick to in the summer to the white. We kept the same trim, but we did the pews and everything in white, and then the walls And we, when we started the process, there was a lot of plaster that was in, what's the word? It was in need of repair. And we had talked to people about putting up sheetrock, and it was going to be expensive. And Johnny Mead and Reggie went through this whole church and redid the walls and plastered all, fixed all the holes, and made it so that we could just paint this baby. And I think to this day that, and even the organ pipes, we took them all down and sanded them and painted them. And it was a process that I still look at today thinking, wow, it still looks pretty good. I don't remember exactly how many years ago that was, but quite a few. And I was going over to Giro's and see if they would paint the pipes, and it was going to be pricey, so we just put them out on sawhorses and rolled them out, and they came out pretty good. But I do remember Reg and Johnny spending a lot of time patching these walls and making it look nice. There are still a few places I see we missed, I have to touch up, but I think it really looks nice. And the pictures that I have, I still have some pictures of the old benches. I'm sure some of you will remember how they looked, but it definitely, I think, transformed the inside of the church to be a little brighter and whiter.
We used to have bats in the belfry, and I'm not sure how they got rid of them. It was difficult, I know that.
Thank you, everyone.
And the back of the church, there are a few copies of an earlier history that I did, 2005, I think, meeting the challenge of changing times. And they're available if somebody wants a blow-by-blow history of the church.